My guest in the studio today is Jenny Lee, who has a very interesting career, both on stage and on the screen as an actor. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you.
I've said that you acted on the stage and on the screen, and you are still acting on both.
Yes. When I started, it was quite a long time ago, and television was not the easiest thing to go straight into. Stage was the thing. The stage was what you're trained for. Nowadays, they train the youngsters. They've got a television studio. They do television technique, everything. We didn't have that, but we had the classics, and we had the moderns, and we had everything. But it was all about stage technique, and you could have a good career on stage.
Did you actually go to a college where you trained?
Yes, I went to Glasgow College of Music and Dramatic Art, as it used to be called. It's now called the Conservatoire, Scottish Conservatoire. I also did some singing. I also went to Glasgow University and did a degree in what they call dramatic art or whatever. So I kind of have always been a bit of an intellectual with regard to the work I'm doing.
Sometimes you think, well, it's better not to know too much. You just want to get into the character.
That's true. You can over-intellectualise, there's no doubt. But one of the great fascinations for me and for many actors now, particularly, is having a good background in the plays that you're working on, in the people that have been written about, in the writers, as well as it's like running parallel. You do two things. You study the character and get into the character, but on the other hand, understanding the playwright and where they've come from is very interesting. I mean, I've recently done a Martin McDonagh play. He directed and wrote the Three Billboards.
The film, yes.
He did that. The Irish playwrights at the moment are very prominent, actually. And knowing a little bit about him, and then when you get into it, it's about the rhythms and it's about all sorts of other things. And knowing a little about his background also helps. But you forget about all that and you get on and you play the character as well. But all that's fascinating. All what we call detective work's great fun.
Therefore, there are three people involved in this. There's the actor. There's the director who also does all this research and work. And then you're saying that you actually draw from the writer or the history or the context or the surroundings, whatever else it is.
It's always interesting. Not everybody's bothered. It depends what kind of an actor you are. But if you're looking at Benedict Cumberbatch or Fiona Shaw or whoever, whereas Judi Dench should probably say, no, just give me the script. You know, I don't know, but she does tend to say, I just read the script.
Okay, really let's go back to the beginning. You went to the university first,
did you? No, I went to drama college.
Drama college first.
And I did a degree.
And that's where you learned the stagecraft.
Right? I learned it for 3 years at Glasgow. Right. Yeah, I was at drama college and I had as a sideline, I went and did a diploma in dramatic arts, I think it was called, at the same time. I kind of balanced out the one with the other.
So that's where you get this idea of the two sides of the actor from. The ability to get into the character, but also the ability to know a little bit more about what's going on. Where's this character coming from? Where in the brain of the writer has this person emerged from?
Yeah. Absolutely. I find it fascinating.
And do you think that comes across to the audience that you really understand where you are?
Not necessarily at all. And I think if you're too intellectual about it, then it would be terribly boring. But it doesn't want it to get in the way of what you're doing, because it's an emotional thing, acting. It's an instant response to what somebody says to you when you say something back. You don't think, oh, the playwright would like me to do this, that or the other, you know, unless it's a particularly unusual piece. Avant-garde, 1960s, I'm trying to think, Ionesco, whatever, you know, some of the really unusual playwrights that came along.
Well, you talked about the Irish earlier, and I was looking at your long list of successes, and one of them, you were in Happy Days by Beckett.
Yes.
Now, I imagine that means you were buried up to your waist in sand for the first act and up to your neck in the second, is that right?
Yes, yes. We took it to the Edinburgh Festival as well. I can't remember how we managed to get round the problem of it, you know, because, you know, the turnaround at the Edinburgh Festival was 15 minutes. You can't actually get a load of sand on stage in a great hurry and take it away again.
Now, that was quite a physically demanding performance, I assume, because it's quite difficult to be buried in sand, and certainly in the second half when you're up to your neck and you're trying to see what the other character is doing, because he's crawling
around behind and in front of you. That's right. I was doing it in Wimbledon in the theatre that I was running at the time called Attic, in a studio, and I just met my current husband. This is the first time he was going to come and see me act, and I thought, right, okay. I'd been in his radio play and he was expressing great interest in all that. And I thought, we'll see. So I said, right, come and see me in Happy Days. If he survived that, I thought we might have a future.
You mentioned Wimbledon. Now, this is where you were acting as well as directing. It was a...
I don't know. Somebody said, shall we start a theatre? And we were on the fifth floor of Wimbledon Theatre in the rehearsal room up there. So we called it Attic because it was the highest. People really had to start 10 minutes before the... order to get to their seats. They had to allow an extra 10 minutes to get up the stairs. Yes, it was a musician, myself, and another actor called Colin Haig. We started with Alan Bennett's Green Forms and a visit from Miss Prothero. I think they were written as radio or television. Never been done on stage, because we always did firsts, you know, premieres of one kind or another. And Johnny Gould, the musician, asked Alan Bennett personally if we could open with that, and he said yes. So that was the beginning.
And what made you go into this concept of a theatre group? I mean, effectively, what you were doing was creating a group of people who were going to stay together, or was it a company that people came in and out of?
Well, we ran it, though. I mean, we decided on what we were going to do, and to start with, I was just marketing. That's all I was doing to start with. I was working at Bristol Old Vic at the time, actually. I remember trying to do the marketing for Bristol Old Vic, which is very peculiar. It was a wing and a prayer. Absolute wing and a prayer. We got a few benches and 15 lights. You know, it's the usual story. And then it moved down to what was the old ballroom. And I did a kind of Joan of Arc to the Wimbledon Council and said, we would like to do theatre in this space. And they said, you can have it for 10 weeks in the year. That was the beginning. And now it's a fully established theatre space. But it was a terrific thing to do. It's the autonomy of it. It's the excitement of actually deciding, instead of somebody saying, would you like to come along and play this small part? But, of course, we're choosing you, but there are other people coming along as well. So you might not, you know, you might not get it and all that. You say, no, actually, the play I really want to do is this one. And I'm going to do Rosmer's Home, as I did at one point, directed it. And I got a translation that had never been done before. And, you know, this is going to be my version. So it gives you a terrific feeling of being part of the whole theatre world rather than a tiny cog in it. I think that has appealed to a lot of people over the years. Some people stay in the directing and in the producing very successfully. A lot of actors have moved on into that. But for me, acting has always been the thing I was born to do. So,
how do you know you were born to do it?
I just know it. How you know you were born to be an artist or a musician? It's the same thing, and it has its own agony to go with it, because it's an interpretive art. You're not creating yourself. You've got to have something to interpret. So somebody has to ask you to interpret it. Whereas if you're a writer, it doesn't matter if nobody ever buys your books, because you can still write it and express yourself. Same with paintings. A musician can always play somewhere, anywhere. An actor needs an audience, as we have here.
As a child, you must have performed. You must have had a sense of what was going on from a very early age.
I was born into a non-theatrical family. My father sang round the piano, a lovely voice. My mother played. So that was sort of typical of the period. My sister and brother were both musicians, and my mother played the piano and they did a trio. And I decided I didn't want to be that. I would far rather do what they called elocution lessons. Partly because, as I was always ignored when they were playing, and I just thought, well, I'm not joining them.
You were the youngest one.
It was the youngest one. So I went off and did elocution lessons instead. Just somebody gave me a puppet theatre, I did puppets, I did the lights, I did everything. It just was something that was part of what and I couldn't wait to go to drama college. I was meant to go to university and study science or something. And I you know, at the age of 16, that was it for me. I was away.
That caused problems with your musical but otherwise non-theatrical family?
No. My mum was on her own by that time. I mean, but I just went through from Edinburgh to Glasgow, and she knew that was what I wanted to do. And they let me in at that age.
Is that unusual? Even then, was it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I did an audition where I actually faced upstage and did the whole speech to the back wall, because that's where my couch was when I practiced in my sitting room. So I don't know how on earth I got in. Dear God.
Now, you've taken that talent, first of all, onto the stage, into theatre, but you also moved into television. How long ago did you move into television for the first time? Because you've done quite a lot of stuff on the small screen.
Oh, yes, I've done a lot. But when I came to London, which wasn't too long before I was down here, because the work in Scotland, there wasn't a great deal. Of course, you then went up for television parts and all that in the series and other things.
Do you have an agent?
Yes, I got an agent and started doing whatever came along. I did one extraordinary piece called Ape and Essence, which was an Aldous Huxley script. It was a play for today, all about the end of the world. And it's based on his novel called Ape and Essence, apparently. It was an extraordinary, big, futuristic piece. I did a series on Colette, and I was in that, and Dr. Finney's Casebook, of course, and various other things.
Television is very different, presumably, for an actor from the stage, because on the stage, you've got into the character, and you're there, although you may come on and off stage during the evening. Effectively, your character is continuing through that.
Yeah.
Television can be quite quite different, can't it? You're there and then you sat somewhere for several hours or the following day, or you come back and do another bit. I mean, how does it work?
That's more like film, really. I mean, film is very, you sit around for hours and hours. It's true, you sit around for hours and hours and then they need you and you've got to be able to do it that moment.
Yeah. Television is a bit more relaxed on that than that.
Television is like that too, to a degree. And the main thing, as I recently read Michael Caine's book, and he, all the way through, which fascinated me, insists, learn your lines, know your lines backwards. Now, he was a film actor, really. With the stage, you get your 3 weeks or your 2 weeks or even your 1 week. When we did weekly rep, which I did actually get the tail end of, you were actually learning, putting on a play each week. So you were actually trying to rehearse and learn and all that. But television, like this recent one I've been doing, which is Hollyoaks, you have to go absolutely to the lines learnt, and then it's plotted, you know, laid out how you're going to move or which positions you're going to be in, and then they run through the lines and then they film it.
When you start a stage play, you've rehearsed it, let's say, for 2 weeks. It's hopefully, if you're not in rep, you've done 2 weeks of rehearsal. And in that time, you've got to know the other actors quite well.
Yeah.
You not necessarily know them at the beginning, but you've got to know them. And you've all brought to it your thoughts, having learnt the lines. And then you find they don't necessarily gel with each other. So you rethink some of it. And that's the director is trying to pull all that together. Television, you turn up having learnt your lines. Do you know the other characters?
People just be. On television, they be. And they're usually cast because they're very close to, and the stuff is immediate, and the dialogue tends to be sparser. Something like Killing Eve is a little bit more involved. The Crown would be another one, but The Crown, when you look at it, people don't have very many lines. They have to create their entire character, and then the line just sits on top, if you like. So you've got to look at the person and believe that they are who they are, and then they only have two or three things to say. It's a different way of working, if you like. You've just got to be kind of relaxed and inside who you are. And you don't tend to travel too far from yourself. And that's kind of the secret of, and when you do, then you need to do it very subtly. It depends how good the writing is. You tend to see the function of your character within a television very clearly. Whereas on stage, it can have huge kind of, I wouldn't say metaphysical exactly, but it depends whether if it's a classic or something, then you're actually looking at something that's got depth and subtext and all the rest of it. Television usually doesn't have subtext to speak of. Ken Loach chooses people who are not necessarily trained at all, but they're exactly right for what he wants. And their naturalism is wonderful usually. And we as actors need to learn a lot from that. But then radio, you can express.
Have you done much radio?
Yeah, a lot of radio. A lot of radio. It was originally on The Archers. I played Valerie Woolley on The Archers. Had the first ever affair on The Archers. And they're doing it all the time now, I don't know. She was married to Jack Woolley and she was a bit of a lass. No, that's great when you've got a long-running piece, because then you can develop and you can find your own characteristics. And the writers start writing your characteristics that you're developing into your character, as well as the plot lines that they have as a series as a whole. But then you get something and they begin to use foibles or...
And do you find this happens in the television? I mean, you mentioned Hollyoaks.
That was very recently. I mean, unusually. And I didn't get to wear high heels either. No, I was playing a terrible granny, a hateful granny on it. And I was amazed because most of the cast were, I think, 30 years younger than I was. So I was delighted to be there. It was great. And I had such fun. But by gum, you had to know your lines. I mean, you know, really had to know them backwards.
Is that because the technology is first, as it were, that the actors are there to participate in a process which is driven by the technology and they need to produce in a certain amount of time, certain sorts of budgets, therefore the actors have just got to be ready to go?
I don't know if it's technology exactly. It is the amount of material that they need to produce in a short space of time in order to make the whole thing viable. And they're all the same EastEnders. I've done EastEnders and they tend to be the same. Casualty and Holby City are not as pressured, but Doctors is very pressured and they'll just sort of do your rehearsing and they'll say, oh, that's fine, we'll use that as a take. And you say, but that was a rehearsal. It's the first time we did it. And they say, no, that's fine.
Is that hard for an actor thinking, but I haven't delivered my best?
Well, no, you just go along with it. And sometimes the spontaneity is all part and parcel. You see on film, they say, don't learn your lines too well. Another technique is just learn them before you do them so that they just come as if they've naturalism is all. You know, this feeling that you're actually a genuine person just saying what comes into your head. Very important.
But very different from the stage again. If you're in a classical play on stage, which, as you say, has got so much hidden meaning, if you like, that you're trying to bring out as well as their characters and their relationships with each other, that demands so much of you. And yet I have a sense that perhaps television doesn't demand very much of you.
Your screen time is usually less, but it depends what it is, what you're doing. The challenge is to play a small part and make it appear as rounded and have as much depth as a bigger part. That's always a challenge. It's a challenge on stage as well, because you're not given enough information. They're not interested in your character, the writer. You're there as a function to do, say hello and open the door or whatever it happens to be. And it's a different challenge from playing a big part. Big parts are great. Ralph Richardson once said that acting's like shooting clay pigeons. He said, when you've got a big part, you've got lots of clay pigeons. It doesn't matter if you miss two. When you've got a small part, oh, if you miss one.
Did you ever act with Ralph Richardson?
I didn't. No, I didn't. But I admired him tremendously. Yes, him and Gielgud, I thought they were great.
Yes.
But he had a tremendous, wicked, wicked sense of humour. It's lovely. But each time, the thing that matters is that it's your thoughts in your head that you're expressing, and the words are you, is the way you're doing it. So both are the same. Television, film, all three. Radio's different because, you know, you're given a script and you don't learn it. But the spontaneity of actually the thought comes before you speak. In every case. And then what you speak is what the thoughts produce. So that's how it works.
What's the most difficult play you've ever done?
Happy Days was a challenge because at one point I missed out a speech. I jumped and I was able to put it back in later. Nobody knew the difference.
This is the luck.
Beckett is tricky. Beckett is tricky.
Yes.
Has to be said. And
the audience would have come to that. There would have been those who knew Beckett before and therefore they were okay with the sort of things that he was up to. And there were those that would have been completely mystified by it. Why is this woman buried up in this pile of sand?
I know.
Muttering
I know.
On about something we can't understand.
I know.
So it's quite difficult. But how do you cope? Do you sense that the audience understands in a play like that? That's quite difficult to do, not just physically, but because it's a difficult text.
Well, they wouldn't be there if they weren't interested in seeing it. And it has a lightness and it's quite comedic in its own way. Beckett has got that. He gets a bad reputation. But you're there to entertain. That's the main thing. And you're given these wonderful words to do it with. But the repetition is sometimes quite tough. But no, you have to decide what it is you're doing. It's like looking at a painting that's surreal or listening to a piece of music that doesn't conform. It has the same quality. And as such, it's a release and it's fascinating. Because all the words, they're all colours and they're all pictures that you're painting. So they're not a straight narrative line. It's all jumbled up and thrown about. And in a way, it's liberating. If you do an Agatha Christie, it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
I was going to say which are the easiest ones to do, and it's presumably that sort of
play. I tell you, Agatha Christie is terrible to learn because it isn't written very well. I shouldn't be so rude because it's done all over the country, but you're playing usually a stereotype. And if a play is badly written, that's when it's difficult to learn because it has no rhythm. It doesn't make sense what they've said and things. So those are the difficult ones.
Some of the classics are very complex.
I'm fascinated by Shakespeare. I love it. And I've directed more than I've been in. Almost, I think I played Lady M and I've played various ones, Nerissa and various people. But I did get the opportunity of directing a lot of them. And the language is wonderful. Just brilliant. And the concept is big. The man's thinking in very big terms, but also minute terms too. Very personal and small terms as well. The musicians in Romeo and Juliet, the below stairs stuff that sometimes get missed out. When they come, they think they've come to play for a wedding. It turns out to be a funeral and they don't know what they're going to do and whether they're going to get anything to eat. You know, there's stuff like this, which is so ordinary that he writes about. I just think he's great, but he has huge concepts as well.
What are you going to do next?
At the moment, I'm up for an advert, and you would not believe this advert might take me to the Bahamas and Kiev, and I'll be away for 11 days.
That is the story of many actors' lives, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean,
most
awful lot of time waiting for the phone to ring.
Yes, but you have to have another life running alongside, otherwise you'll be in trouble. And that's where we all belong. We're reflecting life as it is lived, you know. So if you don't live in it and you live in a bubble, then you're not going to be so good at it.
Thank you very much, Jenny.
You're very welcome.